It is time for our, Sunday Talking Head Show recap, or recrap, with Nicole Bell of Crooks and Liars. Nicole, you there?
I am here. I don't know how I feel about being associated with crap.
All right, a few of the other suggestions from listeners. Pop Goes the Weasel. I sort of like that one. The Fool's on the Hill.
I like that. Yes. That's a Beatle reference. Everything.
Right, right. Weekend Word Wars recap, which is kind of wordy, and Punditscapades.
I'm leaning towards the Beatles.
The Fool's on the Hill. Okay.
Yeah.
Or, as Paul 58 in the chat room says, the Nicole Sisters.
There you go.
Anyway.
We really are. It's scary how similar our lives are.
It is true. It is true. Nicole Bell is with me. By the way, I've got to thank you for joining in with the fill-in gang, with Danielle, the left-neck chick, who came in and filled in for me in the second hour on Thursday because I went to see Crowded House. Now, I
was that, by the way.
I love Crowded House. I have been a Neil Finn fan forever. And huge Crowded House fan, and I don't know if you're a Crowded House fan or not, but you know, here's the story. There's the Finn brothers. Tim Finn started the band Split Enz. It's got to be, I don't know, 20 years ago now. And his little brother Neil joined them for one of the albums, the one that gave us the song I Got You, which was their biggest hit ever. Neil at the time was only like 17. They're based in New Zealand. Then Neil went off and formed Crowded House. And of course their biggest hit was Don't Dream It's Over, you know, hey no, hey.
Right.
No. Okay. And Crowded House at the time was three people. It was Neil Finn, now I'm drawing a blank. Nick Seymour and Paul Hester. And for the longest time it was the three of them. Then they brought in a fourth guy, an American named Mark Hart. And they were always, some of my favorite concerts ever were Crowded House shows because in addition to the amazing music, great harmonies, catchy pop songs, they were also just so much fun on stage. And, I'll never forget one of the shows I saw at the Wiltern Theater in Los Angeles where Paul Hester was, you know, he was the drummer, but some girl from one of the first few rows got up to go to the bathroom and they had started a song and they stopped the song and Neil Finn started playing with her. It's like, it was something we said. And she's like, no, I'm going to the bathroom. Well, Paul Hester jumped down from the stage, followed her to the bathroom, came back with you know, the garbage can from the ladies' room. I mean, it was just, you never knew what you were going to get at a Crowded House show. There was comedy along with the music. Unfortunately, it must have been, I don't know, 8 years ago probably, Paul Hester apparently committed suicide.
You know,
yes. And Crowded House had split up. Neil and Tim did a Finn Brothers record and Neil did a solo record. But after Paul Hester died, Neil decided to put Crowded House back together. And so it's, you know, the show here right now, I don't know if you follow, but the concert industry, the music industry is in the doldrums and the concert industry is really hurting right now. Live Nation has, you know, they've been doing 2-for-1 tickets. Tours have been canceled. You know, the Lilith Fair tour is having major troubles and pissing fans off left and right. The place was not even half full. It was at the Fillmore, the Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami Beach. But I'll tell you, the people who were there were like me. They were diehard Crowded House fans, except for David, my boyfriend, who didn't really know their music and just went because I wanted to go. But they were singing a lot. I mean, it was magic. It was wonderful. Yeah.
Those are always the best kind of tours to go to is when you're in, even, I don't know how big the Jackie Gleason Theater is, but when you're in a semi-small venue.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, the energy is just palpable.
Well, that's it.
I saw Bare Naked Ladies, and I think I was one of the few people who in the U.S. who knew who they were, and I only knew because I had a Canadian boyfriend.
Right.
And the people who were there, it was amazing. I mean, everybody knew the lyrics to the song. Uh-huh. Everybody sang
along. They knew to throw the macaroni and cheese at the right time.
They threw the macaroni and cheese and everything.
Very cool.
And it was such a kick to do. Uh-huh. So, you know, and then they had, what's that song? Their big song.
If I Had a Million Dollars?
I'm so bad with song titles. Uh-huh. You know which one it is.
If I Had a Million Dollars, probably.
No, it was the one before that, the one where the video they did like a takeoff of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and they had the General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard car in there. And
you know, I don't know videos. I'm such a radio person. I know the songs because I played all their music on the radio.
Yeah, I'm a visual person, so I remember the video.
Uh-huh, that's so funny.
I remember the song title.
Uh-huh.
Oh, 1 week. That's what it was.
It's been 1 week since you had...
Right. That was it.
Okay.
So then that came out later that year, and they just went crazy. Everybody went crazy. So, I understand completely.
Yes.
When you've got those bands that you just love.
Yeah. Actually, you know, one more thing, and then we'll get to the politics. I had Neil Finn on this show just a few months back because... Actually, it might have been when I was still on Air America. He does this project called Seven Worlds Collide, which is actually a line from one of the Crowded House songs. But Seven Worlds Collide, he brings in a bunch of artists. This time it was Katie Tunstall and I'm drawing a blank, but a whole bunch of really good artists, brings them all to his home in New Zealand. And for a week, they all hang out and they write songs together and they record them. And the proceeds from this project, this is the second one he did, go to Oxfam. And
that's
it's
great.
It's a wonderful thing. So I've interviewed Neil Finn a number of times, and he seriously is one of my favorite artists. So that was such a treat. Normally, you know, if I go to a show on a weeknight that I'm doing my show, I'll leave right at 8 o'clock, but I didn't want to miss one song and we didn't. So, thanks to you for helping out. And, you know, for the last few weeks when I've been dealing with my broken foot, which is just a royal pain in the ass.
Yeah, I can imagine. Anytime. You know, I am happy to help you out whenever I can.
Great. Well, and I also have to thank you on behalf of all the listeners for watching these Sunday shows so we don't have to. Especially Fox News, because I can't go there. And, boy, it sounds like yesterday was just... one of the all-time greats, and I'm saying that in the most sarcastic way.
Yeah, well, you know, they didn't even attempt a semblance or even sort of a nod towards bipartisanship. Every single person guesting on the show yesterday were Republicans, and they were, you know, high-profile Republicans. They had Sarah Palin as a headliner, and they had been touting... you know, exclusive interview with Sarah Palin for the whole week prior.
Okay, now, isn't she on their payroll, though? Isn't she a Fox News contributor? I mean, why would they tout an exclusive interview with them when she works for them?
Yeah, we're not going to worry about facts. We're Fox News. We don't get into those little pesky things. And the other thing about it that's so funny is that the reason why they have an exclusive with Sarah Palin is because she's afraid to go on any other network.
Well, of course.
I mean, it's friendly territory on Fox News. She knows she's not going to get caught. And so that, you know, caught up in some sort of problem, they're just going to help her along if she gets stuck. So, of course, they've got an exclusive. And ironically, they also did later in the day, they had an exclusive interview with Sharon Angle,
you know,
who's running for Harry Reid's seat, and that didn't turn out so well for her.
Well, let's fast forward to the end for 1 second before we get to the Sarah Palin, because this Sharon Angle clip you sent is the funniest of all. This is Sharon Angle when asked by the guy Carl Cameron on Fox why she doesn't do more interviews. You got to hear this exchange.
There was a tremendous amount of discussion about Sharon Angle's taking a defensive posture.
We needed to have the press be our friend.
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. To be your friend?
Well, truly.
That sounds naive.
Well, no. We wanted them to ask the questions we want to answer so that they report the news the way we want it to be reported. And when I get on a show and I say, send money to SharonEngle.com so that your listeners will know that if they want to support me, they need to go to SharonEngle.com. Right. So,
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that is the Tea Party mentality in a nutshell.
We need the press to be our friends.
We want it to be friendly. We want to control the news. We want to manage it, and we're not going to come on unless we can prove to you.
That
you can prove to us that you're going to help us out.
She thinks that's the role of the media in the country, is to be her friend and to report the news, the report her story the way she wants it reported.
And unfortunately, I think that has been the case for so many right-wing politicians that it's not a surprise that she thinks that that's the way it works.
It is incredible. Incredible.
But, you know, ironically, later on in the interview, they really weren't able to hide how nutty she was. You know, and they went full on into how many of the constitutional amendments she would like to repeal.
Well, but they didn't get her to say it. I'll play that. This is Carl Cameron talking about Sharon Engel and what she stands for.
More precisely, she's advocated phasing out Social Security and Medicare, withdrawing from the United Nations, abolishing the EPA and much of the tax code, and banning all abortions.
But it's not just the positions that Engel has taken. It's how she's defended them. She suggested that entitlement programs have, quote, spoiled our citizenry, that it may be part of God's plan if rape victims get pregnant, and to some, she even seemed to sanction armed insurrection. A Second Amendment remedy is what she called it if Harry Reid isn't beaten at the ballot box.
Amazing. And the thing that's really scary, though, is, you know, she's running for the Senate from Nevada. She's trying to, you know, defeat Harry Reid. And on the way to the airport from when I was leaving Netroots Nation, the cab driver said, oh, you're here for that blocker convention? I said, yeah. He said, well, and then he proceeded to tell me how he's an independent. He was a Democrat, but he's an independent now. And Harry Reid is just horrible. And I said, but you can't seriously be thinking about voting for Sharon Engel. And she's a nut job. And he's like, well, you know, Harry Reid's a crook. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know why Harry Reid's a crook in his eyes. I'd be actually interested in examining that more because I don't think progressives really have an issue with him being a crook so much as they have an issue with him being spineless.
Yes.
But to say, oh, well, I would rather have the known, I would rather not have the known quantity, as distasteful as that is, to get this all new set of crazy that is literally tearing down the fabric of our society, is in favor of tearing down the fabric of our society. To me, that's going a little extreme to the other side.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I keep hearing this, oh, I'm an independent thing. And I was having a conversation with Susie Madrick of Suburban Gorilla about this. I don't think these people are independents. I think these people are Republicans who are embracing a rebranding because the Republicans have screwed everything up.
Yeah.
That, you know, nobody wants to be on the losing team, so it's easier to say, oh, I'm not a Republican, I'm an independent.
Right.
And then you don't have to take responsibility for how bad everything's been for the last 30 years.
Very, very good point. Nicole Bell is with us from Crooks and Liars. It is the, wait, what are we calling it? The fools on the hill. Yes, they all appeared on Fox News Sunday yesterday. So, well, she's not quite on the hill, although she'd like to be atop the hill, I suppose. Sarah Palin, for an exclusive interview with Chris Wallace on Phone News Sunday. Again, why it's exclusive, I don't know. She's on the payroll. But anyway, this is the clip that I may have to cut it up a few times. There's a couple of clips, but there's so much that needs to be commented on here. But this, her first statement here, has gotten a lot of press since she said it yesterday. Here we go.
Let's talk about some of the big issues that are going to be coming up for the midterms between now and November. A federal judge has now blocked the key provisions of the Arizona immigration law. Your response?
Well, this is a temporary suspension of some of the key elements in the law that Jan Brewer pushed hard for Arizonans and for the rest of the country to have the result of us being more secure. So, you know, that's unfortunate that the judge chose those steps, but it is temporary, and Jan Brewer, bless her heart, she's going to do all that she can to continue down the litigation path to allow secure borders.
Bless her heart.
Jan Brewer has the cojones that our president does not have to look out for all Americans, not just Arizonans, but all Americans in this desire of ours to secure our borders and allow legal immigration to help build this country, as was the purpose of immigration laws. If our own president will not enforce a federal law, more power to Jan Brewer and 44 other states who are in line to help support Jan Brewer in state law. State efforts to do what our president won't do.
Hey, she doesn't stop, does she?
No.
Jan Brewer's got the cojones that our president doesn't have. Wouldn't she be deported for using a word like that?
Well, yeah. The irony of using Spanish when talking about Mexican illegal aliens crossing the border isn't lost on those of us who actually have more than one brain cell
yeah.
rubbed together.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, also just the very fact that she can basically emasculate our president, you know, in that way, to question his manhood. You know, do you remember a few years ago when the Dixie Chicks said, oh, you know, we're embarrassed to be from the state of Texas?
I remember it very well.
So horrible.
Yep.
That we burned their albums were burned in the street.
Oh, I know.
You know, people stopped playing.
How dare you criticize the commander in chief? Hello,
in the time of war.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm a little unsure why those rules have changed. Well, I'm not unsure. I know exactly why these rules have changed because we're not talking about a Republican president.
That's right.
Anymore,
that's exactly why.
And
the Democrats don't have, I hate to say it, the cojones to stand up and cry foul.
Yeah. If we want to get into a discussion of cojones, I think that is something that we need to do. Although, you know, there's a strange sort of double standard in terms of pearl clutching, as I call it. You know, Republicans just get horrified by any tiny perceived slight, and they can derail a conversation.
Oh yeah. I had a fight one day, believe it or not, with the guy who used to be funny, Dennis Miller, because I mentioned that Ronald Reagan was the start of all the problems in this country. And I demeaned his God, and he just took such offense to it, then he just only referred to me in the third person, like I wasn't in the room anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a weird sort of ad hominem that's okay for them, that's not okay for us
yeah.
to do.
Yeah, and the Democrats let them get away with it, though. They don't say, hey, hold on a minute. You know, they don't cry BS anymore, and
right.
they should.
Right, they should. And, you know, it's secondary even that Sarah Palin is factually wrong.
Yeah,
we have deported more people during the Obama administration than we did during the Bush administration. Year for year, we're doing more deportation. So clearly, they are working in terms of enforcement of immigration rules. You know, they're not doing it in a fascist 1930s Germany way where we're demanding citizenry carry papers with them everywhere they go.
Although they are trying to do that in Arizona. Luckily, that part of the law got struck down by a district court judge last week.
Exactly. That is the cojones that Jan Brewer possesses.
Exactly.
The ability to emulate Nazi Germany. And, you know, forgive me for going Godwin. I know that's the end of the discussion. But I really can't see a stronger parallel in the history of time. They're now demanding that people prove that they are citizens. Otherwise, they go to jail.
Yeah.
And that is so unconstitutional, and it's so illegal, and it's so egregious. And you would think, you know, I would hope that we have enough memory of what happened at that time for us to not want to go back to that time.
No kidding. No kidding. But you know what? The right is trotting out that analogy and using it to say this is what Democrats are and what they're doing. I mean, they're the ones using the Obama as Hitler meme, you know, and those posters. I mean, again, it's this mirror world. It's opposite land.
It's bizarre world, but, yeah. But that's also, I mean, it's the tactical choice on their part. They do that, and then they deflect it from them. And all of that is always projecting their stuff. It is always projecting their, you know, issues. Like, they'll say, oh, the liberals or the Democrats are threatening the Constitution, but if you take a look at reality, who are the senators who are actually trying to repeal the 14th Amendment? It's not Democrats trying to do it, it's Republicans.
That's right.
So, you know, whatever they accuse us of doing, they're doing. But by being louder, by being the first ones to use the name calling, by being the first ones to, you know, to scream accusatory sentences, they deflect the attention off of them.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, we're just not smart enough to get back in their faces or to learn this thing. And I don't understand why, because...
You know what? I don't know that it's smart. I don't know that it's smarts, because I think... As a rule, I think the Democrats are probably smarter than the Republicans. But this goes back to that, you know, the whole thing about being educated and, you know, smart as a negative. This is what the Republicans use. I think we're just not as cunning. We're not as clever. We're not as, you know, we don't have the copywriters that they do. We don't have the bumper sticker mentality. We try to, you know, we use too many words to explain something where they just, you know, they'll just write it on their hand.
Right. Well, I think we have a good faith belief that if we present ourselves as calm and as in possession of facts, that people will listen to us and be persuaded by the truth. And when I say I don't know why we don't have the smarts to figure that out, you're right. We have not yet figured out how to win the messaging game.
No.
Because we do have the facts in our corner. We do have the truth in our corner. And we have history to show that, you know, the country does better under democratic congresses,
yep.
under democratic presidents. We have proof that the economy does better, that jobs are better. And yet, even with all of this information, we're still fighting, you know, offense, not defense. We're still doing defense on trying to get through the messaging. And I don't know, you know, I wish that I could be in Washington, D.C. as a consultant right now to get in people's faces and say, you need to get out on TV. You need to start talking.
Yeah.
Because you're not doing it, and you're going to lose because of that.
Yeah.
You know, and thank God we have people like Alan Grayson and Anthony Weiner and Al Franken who have at least learned that bit of media savvy to help win, you know, the media war.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, and Al Franken's been playing a pretty low key. I think he's just finally starting to, you know, to speak out more. I think his first year in office, he just played it very low key. But Alan Grayson, I'll tell you, he needs to conduct a seminar in the House and teach the other members of Congress how to get out there and get in their faces and how to, use messaging and how to, you know, come up with catchy phrases that stick. Because the Republicans truly beat us at that. Now, back to yesterday, Sarah Palin was at it again with writing stuff on her palm. She couldn't remember that her facts and even what she wrote on. Well, they weren't facts. She wrote something that was wrong on her palm, didn't she?
Well, she did. She was talking about unemployment, and you know this goes back to the championing of the stupid on the right wing side.
Right.
She very cheerfully showed everyone that she had written $3.8 trillion as in terms of the money that we would spend or that would cost us if the Bush tax cuts expire. And she said, I wanted to make sure I got the number right because I know the liberals will get upset with me if I say $3.7 trillion. Because that, you
but
know, point
I don't understand
what we're going to focus
what
on.
What was she trying to say? If we let the Bush tax cuts expire, it will cost us $3.8 trillion?
That Americans will pay $3.8 trillion. And then she goes on. Do you want to play the clip? So,
Yeah, actually, I don't know where, I think it comes in towards the end of this. So let me cue into it a bit.
Because, you know, the spin coming from Gibbs in the White House, you're never going to get the truth out of their messaging. But Democrats are poised now to cause this largest tax increase in U.S. history. It's a tax increase of $3.8 trillion over the next 10 years. And it will have an effect on every single American who pays an income tax. Small businesses especially will be hit hardest. And small businesses account for roughly 70%. Of all of our job creation in this country. So raising taxes on these employers is the worst thing that can happen.
Can I just ask you, what do you have written on your hand?
$3.8 trillion next 10 years, so I didn't say 3.7, and then get dinged, you know, by the liberals saying I didn't know what I was talking about. But these higher income tax rates, though, it's going to result in things that people aren't understanding is a part of this. The reinstatement of the marriage penalty tax, cutting the child tax credit in half, higher investment taxes, capital gains taxes increasing 15% to 20%, qualified dividends, those taxes going up, elimination of certain exemptions and deductions, and a phasing out of personal exemptions.
Okay.
We could go on and on and on about what's a part of this expiration of the Bush tax cuts that people, I think, are just superficially hearing information on. They need to delve in there. They need to dig in there and get the information, get the facts, and don't believe the spin coming from the White House.
Hey.
I actually agree with her. We need to get the facts out and don't believe the spin. But
that's
the problem
right.
is that she's the one spinning.
Thank you.
the tax cuts, one, the expiring of the Bush tax cuts is not a tax hike. They keep talking about it, the single largest tax raising taxes in the history thing. No. It's not.
No.
We're expiring. The tax cut is expiring. That was done by the Republican Party because that was the only way they could get it passed through reconciliation. Which, you know, then we can go reconciliation.
Thank you.
But,
yes. And so they got it through a reconciliation, so it lasts 10 years. Guess what?
Right.
The 10 years is up. It expires. And if I remember correctly, the wealthiest of Americans did pretty damn well during the Clinton years. And so it would go back to the rates that they were paying then. But the tax cuts wouldn't expire on the rest of us. We have the biggest tax cuts now than we've had in history, right? We're paying less in taxes than we've paid in how long?
Exactly. That's the thing. This expiration, it's very awkward to try to say this, the expiration of these tax cuts really only affects the top 20% income earners in the U.S. Top 20%, that means 80% of us, we're not getting affected by it. So that whole everyone's getting affected by it, you know, 80% of us, we're getting affected by having those same tax cuts that we've had for the last 10 years. So I'm not going to complain. And those 20% income earners, that's people who are making over $250,000 a year. And if you're telling me that they can't afford that bump back up to Clinton rates, I'm gonna laugh in your face. That's just ridiculous.
Right, but spin that most of them yesterday were talking about, they're trying to say, well, you're gonna tax now small businesses, and that's gonna, you know, that's the problem. In fact, Mitch McConnell on that same show was asked about the small business lending bill that, of course, the Republicans wouldn't allow a vote on this week. In fact, let's hear that clip now.
Blocking lending assistance for small business?
That is another TARP. You know,
this is Mitch McConnell.
That
That's
under
a TARP.
The previous administration and under this one. Basically, the lending facility portion of that bill is TARP 3 or the son of TARP.
So you're, because there had been some question whether this is a procedural issue, you're now saying that Republicans are against boosting lending assistance to small business.
This particular provision is another TARP. It puts the government in the position of taking equity positions in businesses. Look at what they've done. They're running banks, insurance companies, car companies. They've nationalized the student loan business, taken over health care. We don't need the government taking equity positions, ownership positions, in any more private sector businesses. That's not the way out. The way out is to kill this job-killing tax increase that's coming, that they advocate, that is going to affect 50% of small business income and 25% of our workforce. That's going to be their plan in September to raise taxes in the middle of a recession.
So that's Mitch McConnell talking about this small business lending bill, which the Republicans again squashed, and calling it TARP 3 or son of TARP.
Right, which is ludicrous. I mean, even I would hope anybody could see that that's ludicrous because, you know, TARP was billions and billions of dollars handed to individual corporations with absolutely no regulation, no control, nothing. Lending small businesses, giving small businesses loans,
right,
is hardly the same thing.
No, and Republicans are supposed to be pro-small business, Dorian in the chat room just
exactly.
wrote. Yeah.
So they talk out of both sides of their mouth. They talk about how they're trying to protect small businesses by keeping them from getting tax hikes. And let's keep in mind that the average income for a small business in this country, I looked it up before I came on the air, is $258,000.
Uh-huh.
So when he says this affects 50% of the small businesses, he's right. That is basically the dividing line, is $250,000. But that means that the people who are really struggling, the people who are looking for these loans,
are the ones who are not making $258,000. Exactly. Exactly.
But we're not protecting them. We don't care about small businesses. And, I mean, I don't know how many ways the Republicans can sort of prove this. They care about corporations. They care about the upper elite. They care about those people in the top 5% who donate to their campaigns. Everybody else is sort of on their own, and that's the Republican way. And they will make it as difficult as possible for everyone else. So we aren't going to give, we don't want to give small businesses that make less than $250,000 loans to help them get by in a recession because you know what? They don't matter. They don't want to give people social safety nets who are in low-income areas because they don't matter. We don't want to help people get into homes who have been foreclosed upon because of predatory lending practices because they don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that matter for Republicans, and I cannot possibly say this enough times, are those top 5% elites.
I know it. And yet they call us the elites,
and
which is so ludicrous.
Well, again, it's the projection.
Yeah,
it is. It's complete Freudian projection of everything that they are.
It's like, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you.
Yeah,
they're three. You know?
We're back in high school.
Yes,
right now.
Actually, yeah. Elementary school. All right. Liz Cheney, once again, why is she on TV all the time?
Well, she's on Fox News. So
yeah, okay. Well, that answers that. All right, and here she is talking about the WikiLeaks. Oh, boy.
I would point out that although you've got this, you know, the news about the WikiLeaks documents that came out this week, and clearly Julian Assange's effort was to change course for the U.S. policy in Afghanistan, that vote that you talked about, Chris, came after those documents were released. So he was unsuccessful in that. I think he does clearly have blood on his hands, potentially, from the people whose names were in those documents who've helped the U.S., and I think that's something he'll have to live with now. And just one further point on this, I would really like to see President Obama move to ask the government of Iceland to shut that website down. I'd like to see him move to shut it down ourselves if Iceland won't do it. I'd like to see them move aggressively to prosecute Mr. Assange and certainly ensure that he never again gets a visa to enter the United States. What he's done is very clearly aiding and abetting Al-Qaeda. And as I said, I think he may well be responsible for the deaths of American soldiers in Afghanistan.
And then let's waterboard him.
Well, I don't think there's anything more ironic that you will hear today than a Cheney saying that somebody else has blood on their hands over what's happening in Afghanistan.
You got that right. Uh-huh.
But, you know, one, I don't know if she understands how laws work, international laws work. And I don't know how Obama is supposed to close down an international website. And it's an open source website because so you can block it in the U.S. It doesn't stop it from being seen in, you know, Iceland, Sweden. I think the servers are actually in Sweden, not in Iceland, but I'm not positive about that. I don't know why she thinks that that is something that's even possible to do, or she's just more of that let's screw with Obama and make him look bad at any cost.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this is what I would do when she has no clue, you know, what she can do. She just talks out of her ass.
And it's, the thing about it is, and I talked about this a little bit with Danielle and Shana and Tom, the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that this WikiLeaks is a game changer, and I think it's scaring the crap out of DC and out of the media corps, because suddenly information is not theirs to divvy out. And that's a very, very scary thing for them.
Mm.
Now, it can be used irresponsibly, and I do have issues with some of the stuff that was released, but I do think that Julian Assange did try to be semi-responsible about this information. You know,
I think so, too. They held back about 15,000 documents, and they were trying to get names and sensitive information redacted.
Right, and they took it to other media sources. They had things confirmed.
Yep.
You know, they were trying to make sure, and it's not that they're trying to aid and abet Al-Qaeda, but of course that's the spin Liz Cheney's going to put on it. They are trying to open up communications. They are trying to make it a transparency where there has been none, and purposely. I mean, remember that the New York Times withheld information about waterboarding for months. That they had. They were protecting this administration, or not this administration, but the Bush administration, with the waterboarding information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the New York Times also withheld the warrantless wiretaps until after the election. I mean, they purposely didn't want people to know until after the election, which to me is interfering in the election, interfering in democracy. And exactly what the notion of a free press it should be completely against. But, you know, nothing happened to the New York Times for that kind of hackery. But Julian Assange has just told the world, you know what, all bets are off the table now.
Yeah.
You guys don't get to control this anymore.
Good for him.
And
see,
the people do.
I applaud him. I think this is stuff we need to know, and more power to him. If I could, I'd send him money. I really think too much stuff is withheld from us, and we're supposed to have a free and open media here. Not in this world. So good on them. Nicole Bell of Crooks and Liars with us. We've only got a minute or two left, but I did want to ask you, you wrote a great piece up at Crooks and Liars yesterday, about the idea of a mosque being built at ground zero. It's what, you know, Sarah Palin talked to, you know, gave us the word refudiating about. It is sort of much ado about nothing, isn't it?
Well, it's. I mean, essentially, there are several things about it. You know, that old Linda Richman, Mike Myers skit, you know, the Middle Ages were neither Middle or Ages discussed.
Uh-huh.
The Ground Zero Mosque is neither Ground Zero nor a mosque.
Yes.
You know, it is a cultural center. It is called the Cordoba House, and I don't know, you know, how many of your listeners are familiar with Cordoba in Spain? But this was a community that had Jews, Muslims, and Christians living together in harmony. It was an amazing thing, and that's why it's called the Cordoba House.
Hmm.
You know, it is a cultural center that does include a prayer room. There is a prayer room, but there's also a library. There is also a media room. There is also a
There's a gym, right?
Yeah, a gym. There's all sorts of stuff. So there's no minarets on the building. It's an old Burlington coat factory, as far as I've heard. There will be no call to prayers.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a mosque as Muslims
understand
the term.
500-seat auditorium, swimming pool, art exhibition spaces, bookstore, restaurants.
Yeah.
You know, in Lower Manhattan, an area that needs a little bit of help right now.
And needs to have some healing.
Yes.
And this is the thing that I think people don't get. And I'm going to divulge. I try to keep my personal life out of things. I'm going to divulge that I have a Muslim uncle, and his children are Muslim as well. And they're Sufis. And I have watched as they have suffered over the last, 9 years of being discriminated against because of their religion. and not because they're, you know, they're peace-loving American citizens. And Sufis are a very, it's a very beautiful, mystical kind of sect of the Muslim religion. And actually, Al-Qaeda thinks that they are horrible. Actually hates them worse than they hate Americans. So they are not terrorists. And yet my family keeps being treated as terrorists everywhere they go. My uncle has been strip searched every time he goes to an airplane, airport. For any reason, he'll get strip searched. And it's because he's a Muslim man. And that, to me, smacks of the same racial profiling that we saw with, you know, 1070 in Arizona. So I want to be clear. Muslim doesn't equal terrorism, and it's scary to me that so many people, including the ADL, whose whole mission in life is to be promote tolerance, has sort of made that conflation of, you know, the Muslims really shouldn't be doing this near ground zero, or at ground zero is what they say, but the truth of the matter is this community center is only two blocks away from ground zero.
And in lower Manhattan, 2 blocks is a pretty long way. It's you can't see one from the other. It's not like it's there.
Right. And the building itself, I think, is 12 or 13 stories high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Liberty Tower, which is the building that they're actually putting up at Ground Zero, you know, along with the 9/11 Memorial, that's 105
right.
stories
I
high.
Know.
It's supposed to be the biggest building in the U.S. That's going to tower over the Islamic Community Center.
Yep.
So you want symbolism? There you go. There's symbolism there. But people who want to appeal to the lizard brain, you know, and keep people hating and keep people fearful, and keep pointing and separating people out as the other to be scorned and to be suspicious of, they're fighting this. And it, to me, it's just a terribly sad thing, because this is exactly what we need to do, is to promote tolerance, to promote, you know, understanding, and to reach out to a communal living like they had in Cordova.
I gotcha. Again, I will link to your piece. It's called On Tolerance and Healing. It's at crooksandliars.com. Nicole Bell, it is always a pleasure. I think next week we're going to do it on Tuesday, because you got a family thing on Monday, right?
I do. I am going to be at the happiest place on earth with my children and my nieces.
There you go. That is more important. So I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Nicole Bell from Crooks and Liars, and we are late. Keith's back. All right. That does it for us today. Tomorrow on the show, I believe we will have former big-time Florida politician Maurice Ferrey and Howie Klein of Down with Tyranny, too, and whatever else the day brings us. Thanks for listening, as always. I will talk to you tomorrow. I'm Nicole Sandler, radio or not.
It's the Nicole Sandler Show. Radio or not.